This wastewater treatment plant has received some media coverage in the past, specifically about an environmental impact study that would, according to some city officials there, make it prohibitive to move forward on that project. And this is before the announcement of the grant and the loan associated with this project. Has something changed associated with an environmental impact study required before they move forward with this wastewater treatment plant?
With all of our projects, we require that the borrower, the community, City of Grand Rivers in this case, that they comply with all environmental laws, all environmental policies. You know, there is a comment period in many cases when you do the environmental work, whether it's an environmental assessment or environmental impact study. And the public will, you know, provide comments. And sometimes you see some comments where maybe someone doesn't want it. We take all that into consideration, and we make sure that they comply with the environmental laws and policies in place. We also make sure that their engineering is feasible. We do an engineering feasibility study, a technical feasibility study, and we also do a financial feasibility study. So we want to make sure that this complies with the environmental laws. We want to make sure that this project can get built according to plan, and that it can get built on time and within budget, and that the community, to the extent that they have a loan, is able to repay the loan.
So has the environmental impact study been considered, or has it already taken place?
Yeah, before we obligate the funds, we consider the environmental study, the engineering, and financial. So all of that has been done. Where the project will go from here, once we obligate the funds, is the community will do final design, and then they'll do the bid documents to go out for bid to hire a contractor, and then they'll go under construction. Between now and the, you know, about within 12 months, we require, if permits haven't been received for the siting of the plant and things like that, that all would have been discussed in the environmental documents, but maybe permits still aren't there or things like that.
Why were federal funds necessary? Why couldn't a city or a community like Grand Rivers seek the support from the private sector?
That's under our program. One of the requirements is that the community, if they can receive assistance from the private sector, that they must do so. That they were in many ways a lender of last resort. That a community is coming to USDA asking for federal help because there's no credit available from them, from the private sector. You know, you'll notice this, you mentioned the numbers here, $3.6 million loan and a $2.4 million grant. So on one hand, these folks are going to pay back a loan to the federal government. The grant side helps offset some of the costs and offset the costs that will end up, you know, in the user rates that folks pay for their wastewater treatment. In general, in rural America, the private lenders, they tend not to do the lending for utility work out there. That's the Rural Utility Service that I administer is formerly known as the Rural Electrification Administration, and it was set up because there was no electric service back in the 30s. And we still provide loans to many electric co-ops and other entities out in rural America. The same goes for the telecommunications service that we finance, and also the water and waste that helps improve the economy, the environment, and the quality of life in rural America.
Why wouldn't Grand Rivers be, why wouldn't their project, I guess, be a good candidate for a private sector loan?
In many cases, for a rural infrastructure project, a private lender, a private entity is looking to make money. And when you have a rural area, you have a large geography, you have a lot of space between users. And so let's take a water system in the suburbs or in the cities. You might have 100 users on one street, and it's only a quarter mile long or something like that. Out in rural America, you may have one user per mile. And so when you start getting into the bigger distances out there, the cost to finance the project go up. And then the overall fees that people will pay on a monthly bill, you know, they still have to be reasonable. And we at the federal government make sure that the design of the project is reasonable, that the size of the project is reasonable for the size of the community, but we also make sure that the cost of the project is reasonable. But we also know that in many cases in rural America, it takes a little bit more to finance it because of the bigger geography that you're trying to deal with. If you want to think about it in numerical terms, the landmass that, depending on what kind of numbers you use, whether it's the census definition of non-metropolitan or other governmental definitions of rural, but basically 80% of America, the landmass is rural. So we have a huge landmass, but 16% of the population lives in that landmass. And so once you spread out those subscribers, the users, the people in rural America, the costs just sometimes become prohibitive for private lending.
Well, the acting administrator of the Department of Agriculture's Rural Utilities Service, John Patalino, thanks very much for your time.
Thank you, Chad.